Period Issue for all women.
Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's Sunday Chops. Mickey here, asking you what you know about where your energy comes from. To be clear, I don't mean you get up and go. I mean, what powers your kettle, your fridge, your heating, your transportation? Because I know who I pay to provide that. But when it comes to the hows and whos that get it to, say, my plug sockets, my details were a bit sketchy. Were, that's right. You heard me, past tense. Because I've been on the Zoom with Yasmin Ali, a chemical engineer dedicated to developing renewable energy projects and author of the book Power Up, An Engineer's Adventures into Sustainable Energy. All credit to Yasmin, who has taken a potentially dry and very technical subject and made it a fascinating read. Although I am afraid to say that doesn't mean there are any easy answers to the looming energy crisis. Yasmin's chatting to me about this, about how her grounding in fossil fuels led her to hydrogen, her passion for and optimism about clean energy, why being born in Iraq made her love Norway, and why she's very much not watching Oppenheimer. Before I let Yasmin take over, I'd like to just remind you that not only do we have a Patreon, you'll find us at patreon.com/standardissue, but we're also planning exciting new additions to our membership tiers. I mean, membership tiers for one. If you're already a patron, we thank you kindly. If you're not, for as little as £1 a month, you can access ad-free podcasts. And if you join for a fiver, there is some exclusive content about to start heading your way next month. So if you can, please do power us. And I'll be so grateful that I might stop the terrible segues. Maybe. Hello, I am joined on the Zoom by chemical engineer Yasmin Ali, a woman who genuinely gets giddy around energy infrastructure and is sharing the joy and vast amounts of knowledge in her new book, Power Up. Yasmin, hello.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. I really loved your palpable joy when you get to see pipes. It's incredible.
It's a bit embarrassing, but I thought maybe it'll make other people more open about their loves for these things.
It is genuinely contagious. I feel like there's a lot of Thames waterworks going on up the road from me, always, basically. So I think I'm just going to stick my head through the fence like you do and get involved.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Most of us are lucky enough to kind of take power for granted, aren't we?
I mean, most of us in this country. Yeah. But not in other places.
What drew you to chemical engineering and to energy in particular?
It's not like one of these inspiring, I always wanted to do this stories. I kind of fell into it. I was doing sciences and maths at school. And I don't know if you remember being 17, but it's quite daunting having to choose a career for the rest of your life. I think that's a really horrible thing to make a 17-year-old do. So the only thing I could think of doing was medicine, because that's what my parents do. And I understood what a doctor is, and I didn't know what any other jobs meant. But I applied for university 2 years in a row, didn't get a place to study medicine. Thankfully, now looking back on that, I do remember doing work experience in hospitals, and I passed out 2 or 3 times. That's so I probably should have taken that as a hint.
Probably not the career for you, yeah.
Yeah. But around about that time, I had a leaflet in the post about chemical engineering, and that talked about all the different careers that you can work in as a chemical engineer. So from food manufacturing, so I know people who work in chocolate factories, to energy, water purification, making medicines, that kind of thing. And the leaflet also said, chemical engineers are some of the highest paid graduates. So I was like, okay, I don't know what this thing is, but I'll go and do it. And that's how I got into chemical engineering. And then at some point during university, my parents' neighbor was working for an energy company. And he said, oh, why don't you apply for a summer placement? So I did. And that was really my beginning in energy. And I would say over the years, my interest and my love has grown. So it wasn't love at first sight.
I'm not a stupid woman, but I don't have science smart. Science was always the subject that I struggled with, although I found them really interesting. So this might come across as a really thick question. I can only apologize. Look, what is chemical engineering?
I don't know. Lots of people ask that. It's quite hard to pin down, but I usually say it's that process of turning raw materials into useful products. So if you look around you, everything that we use on a daily basis that's manufactured probably has been touched by a chemical engineer at some point. I like to say it like that because it's a bit creepy.
It sounds a little bit seedy. Yeah, it sounds a bit creepy.
From the clothes that we wear that have synthetic materials in them that were manufactured, to the energy that we use. I mentioned food manufacture, water purification. Everything around us really has come from a raw material and it's been turned into something that's useful for us in our daily lives.
You're everywhere.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
So you started your career working in oil and gas before transitioning away from fossil fuels into more sustainable energy systems. I mean, I can guess why. I know why, because I've read your book. But has your grounding in fossil fuels, which we still massively rely on, helped your work with renewables?
I would say so, yeah, because you learn general skills like project management or, you know, how to put a budget together for something. And all of that is really transferable into renewables. But there's more specific things as well. So working in offshore oil and gas where you're at sea and having to deal with things that you don't need to deal with on land, those types of skills apply if you're working in offshore wind, for example. So I think people from those fossil fuel industries already are and will be very useful for the energy transition.
The chapters where you talk about going out to sea and being on the platforms, not rigs, Mickey, platforms, are so exciting. It sounds really exciting and a little bit, like, pretty dangerous, really.
Yeah, it was quite exciting to do it for the first time, but then you just normalise to it. It becomes, like, a regular thing. It's quite a safe industry, really. There's a big focus on safety, so despite all of the... No, that's why we do all the training. So I talk about the offshore survival training where you're in a swimming pool with a helicopter that's suspended from a crane, like a fake helicopter, and you practice crashing into the sea and getting out of the helicopter. And that sounds scary and dangerous, but that's why we do it, just on that off chance that it does happen. But those things don't happen very often, thankfully.
I just don't think many people, when you say the phrase chemical engineer, think of you dangling out of a helicopter, if I'm honest.
Yeah, that's the mystery of it all, isn't it?
You're making it sound really creepy, Yasmin. I mean, I'm enjoying it, don't get me wrong. The sort of phrase like that you hear when people, we're desperate to sort out climate change. A lot of us are really keen to, like, we need to do something and we need to do it yesterday. But this idea that we should just move to renewables when it comes to energy is, to put it lightly, a bit of a simplification in how the process works, right?
It is, yeah. I mean, if you think about our energy system today, it's very global and it's very interconnected and it's just grown over 100+ years and over many, many generations. So we're not starting from a blank sheet of paper. We have to bear in mind what we've already got and work with that. And then on top of that, you throw in all the people. So a lot of people's livelihoods depend on this. A lot of people are used to doing things how they do it today. So then it just becomes a really complicated social problem as well.
I think the other thing that became clear in your book, and that I maybe hadn't thought about in the way that I knew that people were massively involved in this and livelihoods were involved, because obviously, you know, the miners' strikes, 40 years old, but still very fresh in our memories in this country. So yeah, that hasn't gone away. But it's the fact that we need all of the fossil fuels to make the stuff that can create the renewable energy sources as well. It's all so interconnected.
Yeah, yeah. So if you think about a wind farm, you need lots of concrete to put the foundations in, and that concrete is made in factories that use fossil fuels. And then, yes, yeah, the same for any equipment. So we've got quite a long way to go. But the big kind of consumer of energy around the world is transport and power generation. So if we sort those things out, we've made some good progress and we can then focus on some of the other stuff like industrial processes.
And again, you know, obviously I'm aware of it because I see tankers on the road. You know, you read about like the catastrophes, mainly like when there's oil spills at sea and all of that. But the moving of energy,
I don't think I understood how complicated that is. And not just in the amount of energy it uses up to transport energy, but also that obviously the geopolitical stuff, like the pipeline from Russia and all of the things that get affected by wars mainly and power grabs and all that kind of thing. This is a whole section that you cover in your book. So let's talk about the book. First of all, what made you want to write Power Up?
I love writing. And I also really, as I've spent time in the energy industry, I, as I say, learned to love that. And I was just like, how do I jam these two things together? And that was my simplistic way of doing that. It's like, okay, well, maybe I can write a book about the energy sector. And then looking around at books about energy out there, I couldn't find anything that told that full chain of the energy system. So as you say, the way it's split up is how we get, move and use energy. And the stuff that I did find out there was maybe a little bit academic. And I really wanted something that was story driven and something that most people could hopefully relate to.
We'll see. No, no, props to you, because like I say, I'm not massively science smart. And there are a couple of paragraphs that I had to like squint to understand and read again. But it is all very much in layman's terms. And I think that is really useful because, as I started at the top, like particularly in this country and in the West in general, there's just a taking for granted of like we turn a switch and on comes the lights, unless that is taken away from us. And then, you know, within half an hour, people are like, this is outrageous. Instead of thinking about or knowing about all of the processes that make it possible for us to be chatting on this Zoom call right now. You know, I've got my little light on so you can see me in the murky room that I sit in. And, you know, I made a cup of tea before we started. All of that, we just don't think about it.
That's great. I feel like the message has got through to you, so I'm quite happy with that.
It really has. It was like a really fun day at school when I was reading your book.
Oh, great. That's really nice to hear.
I think another thing that really came across to me was something, and I've learned about this before, I've read about this before, but the frustrating number of chances we have missed when it comes to clean energy and to having clean energy. Could you tell the listeners a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, I think just doing some of the background research around wind and solar, there were opportunities where solar power kind of almost makes it, and then oil and coal are just cheaper, easier, and that's what, as a society, we decide to stick with. And then the same a little bit for wind as well. But I think it's quite easy to say that in hindsight. And at the time, I think, you know, people always choose the easy option because that's how we're wired, I think. But yeah, so I think maybe it's better to focus on the future. So look back at those instances and learn where we went wrong and why, and then see what we can do now to move along that right path for the energy transition. So I don't spend too much time being frustrated about it, to be honest.
Oh, you see, now I'm only just learning about it, so I'm allowed to be a bit more frustrated. It did remind me, there's a brilliant book by Catherine Marsal, who very kindly came on the podcast. I think it's called Mother of Invention, and it's all about inventions that have affected women and been invented by women and all of that kind of stuff. And the fact that we very nearly had electric cars way back when motor cars were being invented, but they weren't considered manly enough. The guys wanted it to be a bit dirtier and a bit smellier, and it's just like, no.
Yeah, I don't think they did. I think probably the men would have been all right with the electric cars being cleaner. But yeah, it's you know, you make cheap oil available and that's the route we then go down.
Yeah. But even now, when it's becoming clear that it's a route that we cannot keep going down, you still get people in power, people who, oh God, we'll never learn, but we should expect more sense from, such as, you know, 30p Lee Anderson. He's recently been saying that, like, oh, but, you know, they've done really well for ages. We've always been able to find it. Why don't we just find some more? How do we get through to them?
I think we are. I'd say the majority of people now accept that climate change is happening, at least. I think we're doing all right. So just looking at the UK, the electricity generation side of things looks quite good. Coal-fired power stations have all pretty much shut down now. There's really good targets for wind power in the country. So I think we're doing okay. There's a few bits where we could be doing better. So around transport, which is a really big emitter of carbon dioxide. And then around the problem here, I think, is heating. So we all have these natural gas boilers in our homes that burn natural gas. And it's a more difficult problem to solve when you have to go into 26 million individual households and tell them to do something different. Whereas if you have a power station that's producing electricity and sending it down a wire, and you change that power station, no one's really going to notice.
Such a good point.
Interaction between people and how they use energy and where they need to change how they do things, that I think is the most challenging.
I think as well, that was something that was a surprising thing for me to learn reading Power Up, was just how little, like relatively little, of our energy is electricity. Because pretty much if I think of what I use, I think I just think it's a lot of electricity, but that is, it's just not the case, is it?
No, unless you happen to live in a completely electric home.
I do not, Yasmin, no.
And even then, if you drive a car, I don't know if you drive a car.
I do have a car.
Yeah. Is it petrol powered?
It is a petrol powered car.
Yeah,
quite an
so
old
there
one,
you go.
Yeah.
That'll be one of your big energy uses, I think.
Sorry, everyone.
Oh, no,
I don't go
right.
very far. It's just all my family live up north and the trains are rubbish.
People shouldn't entirely blame themselves, because we live in like a society and this is the structure that surrounds us. So I think I say somewhere in the book about how, you know, an office building is made of cement and glass and steel and whatever. And if you want to have no carbon emissions, then technically you shouldn't go into that office, but that's not really very practical. So there are quite a lot of things that are outside of our control. And I think we can make some individual choices, but a lot of it is going to come down to like a wider societal change. And I think that kind of stuff we can influence by how we vote, or, you know, how we interact with politics. And also, I always say, you know, you can get a job in the energy sector. Yeah. You can do it that way.
Should we a little bit be blaming ourselves, though?
Maybe a little bit. But yeah, it's not, you can't really blame one individual for the climate crisis that we're in.
Oh, that'd be so
yeah,
useful,
as a collective, yeah. We are a bit shit.
That is such a lovely and mild way of putting it. All right, Mickey here with an advert for BetterHelp Therapy Online. You all right? Such a small question, and sometimes such a big question too, eh? Now, regular listeners will know I am no stranger to depression, and while over time, and with the help of some decent counselling and brilliant friends and family, I've established a toolkit to help when the constantly dripping tap of life gets a bit too much. That does not mean I am a stress-free human rainbow skipping through meadows. I mean, who is? We all carry around different stresses, big and small, and sometimes we can deal, and sometimes it's much harder to cope. Life, innit? Right now, I have a teenage puppy to deal with, and although I love her very, very much, she can be a lot. There, said it. And as quick a fix as it seemed to say, I'm fine, and push it all down into the big inside box and put that lid on. For me, that hasn't been a great long-term solution, in that if I don't get it off my chest, it will at some point come bubbling up, and it's never been one to pick its moments in a good way. I find talking means I can avoid it exploding out of me like a messy emotional volcano all over my nana's carpet. Also, during my various times in talk therapy, I discovered that saying something out loud or writing it down can make it seem much more manageable than allowing it to swirl around and grow ever bigger in my head. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I've found knowing how to reach out is sometimes the toughest bit, but BetterHelp is entirely online. Boom. Which means it couldn't be easier. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a registered therapist, then work your sessions around your schedule. With more than 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Standard Issue listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/standard. That's betterhelp.com/standard. So you really delve into the geopolitical nature of power. And by power, I mean energy, but obviously it has a double meaning there. And there was one line in particular that really struck me. You say fairly near the beginning of the book, I often wonder what my life would have been like if Iraq did not have oil.
I do, it's true. I also always look at Norway with a little bit of jealousy because, you know, they're on the surface, they're kind of the same as Iraq in terms of resources. But for me, Norway is a utopia. And I'm just like, who would I be if I was born there and not in Iraq?
Could you explain for the listeners the difference? Norway is utopia in this sense.
It is. Yeah. So Norway has 90%+ of their electricity comes from renewables. They have lots of hydropower stations, so they use that flow of water that they have in the country to generate their electricity. I think they might be the furthest ahead on electric vehicles in terms of like per capita, I think is the word that I'm for. But anyway, so they're doing really well on that stuff. Their oil and gas industry is very good, but what they did was take the money and put it into a sovereign wealth fund to help the citizens.
Imagine looking after your citizens.
I know, instead of just horrific corruption, as you know, my family is used to being from Iraq.
And do you think, as you get further into your career, that weighs heavy in your mind when you're making decisions and like championing renewable resources?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, because I do look at some of the countries that I've lived in, so Iraq, Libya, and these countries that have enormous oil resources, but they also have a lot of sun and they just haven't made use of that. I start to wonder what would those places have been like had they skipped that whole fossil fuels thing and gone over to renewables from the beginning.
Probably best not to dwell on it too much.
Yeah, because
there's not very much we can do about our ancestors, which is a shame because we probably have clean energy now. As I mentioned earlier and you articulated, it isn't as simple as, and I'm going to use a phrase, just stop oil, because we're seeing that a lot now. But I understand why people are protesting. I absolutely believe in freedom of speech and the power of protest, and we need to fight for our right to keep it. But by simplifying that message, I think it is putting a lot of people off. I wondered how you felt about it.
I've always been supportive of protest. And I think for someone to come in at that kind of extreme end is good in a way, because it makes, we're never going to achieve what they're asking for, but maybe it pushes us to go somewhere in the middle between where we are and where they're saying we should be. Then I think that's quite valuable. But yeah, I don't know what the balance is between protesting and getting people on side versus, you know, getting in their way and maybe diluting the message or putting people off from supporting you. I think you get what I mean.
I do get what you mean. And I agree with you. It's a very fine balance. But as it becomes clear in Power Up, all of this is a much finer balance than either side, because sadly there are still sides want us to believe, really.
I did try to be quite pragmatic and balanced and not say this is the answer. And I think that was something I found with other energy books where, you know, you pick something up that says solar energy is going to solve all our problems. Or, you know, there's a book on hydrogen that was written recently that sells hydrogen as this wonder fuel. And I think it's just not quite that simple. And it is going to be a mix of things, and it's going to depend on the geography, and it's going to depend on what you've already got and how you exchange energy with your neighbours and all these other things. I hope I managed to give a sense of that in the book.
Yeah, you're really even-handed to the point where I was a bit like, oh, this one sounds good. Oh, but come on, Yasmin.
Yeah, I didn't want to tell people what to think. I think I just wanted to present some of the facts and examples. Yeah, just leave people with that thought that it's not simple, it's not easy. And maybe like the next time you hear someone saying this thing is going to solve all our problems, you'll question that.
mean, I would always question that, but yeah, we need to question it quite a lot. So hydrogen could be a wonder fuel, and I know that hydrogen is your baby, so I am going to ask you about this, but I'm just going to see if I've got this right. So hydrogen genuinely is a wonder fuel, but the energy we need to extract it is currently more than the energy it will produce, or there's not been very efficient ways of extraction yet to make it a pure energy.
Not quite.
Damn it.
But almost there. Yeah, almost there. So hydrogen is an element in the universe that's very abundant, but on our planet, it's attached to other things. So water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen, and they're kind of, you know, they cling to each other, and we have to put in energy to prise them apart. If you use renewable energy, then that's okay, because you're not then emitting carbon dioxide in the process of prising the hydrogen and the oxygen apart. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but like, how far back can we go where we, you know, at some point it seems that at the moment there's going to be a fossil fuel involved to make these things happen.
Yeah, there is, but it'll be much less. So I think if we look at reducing the amount of fossil fuel that we use, that's a good start. And then at some point, you'll get to a point where you have enough renewable energy being generated so that you don't need the fossil fuels anymore. But we're probably quite a long way from that.
Right.
It's not like an overnight change. It's going to be very incremental.
That doesn't mean that we shouldn't start the increments, right? We need to
already started the increments.
Oh, good. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Because you are really even-handed. And with every pro for like solar or wind or hydrogen, you are a bit like, there are some cons, guys. I'm just going to, I've got to tell you about these. Sorry, but there are some cons. But it does still feel that your book is optimistic. Are you hopeful about the future of energy?
I am. But I'm just one of these horribly optimistic people. So, yeah, I always see the good side and the hope in the future. And I think just working in the industry and working with the people that I work with, that gives me hope, because a lot of them are very dedicated to this. And I spent some time working in government on energy innovation, and the people I worked with there were just so incredible. I just never thought working in government is going to be that much fun, but it was.
Well, that's good to hear. That is really good to hear, because we need threateningly optimistic people to make the world spin. We absolutely do. Weird question, mainly because I'm about to talk about this with two of my colleagues for another podcast, but I wondered what you thought about Oppenheimer.
I haven't seen it. You mean the movie?
Yeah, the movie.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, okay.
It's too long for me. I can't sit down for 3 hours.
It is too long. I'm going to be talking about how long it is. Yeah. You have a chapter on nuclear energy and how what could have been very positive and a fairly, again, with caveats, clean energy source now has this reputation as being destructive. And just feel like maybe we've just got to the side where we're like, oh, we can talk about it as potentially being clean energy again, and Oppenheimer's come along and gone like boom.
I found it quite I don't know, somehow it's quite a personal journey for me writing that chapter, because I didn't really know where I stood on nuclear, and I realized that I've got that fear because it is a weapon. And I never really made that link before until I started researching and writing. And I was like, oh, wait, hang on. I see what's going on here. So yeah. I just wonder if that's the case for other people as well.
I think that and Chernobyl have absolutely skewed how we feel about nuclear energy and its possibilities.
Yeah. Did they mention Werner Heisenberg in Oppenheimer?
They're all in there.
They're all, because there was a story that I came across. So Heisenberg was a German Christian, but he was harassed and called the White Jew because he worked on quantum mechanics. And that was seen as kind of more of a Jewish physics thing, because Jewish physicists studied it. And my favorite bit was that Heisenberg's mum got involved in this, and she knew Heinrich Himmler's mum through family connections, and she asked her to tell her son, who was this leading member of the Nazi party, to give Werner a break And it worked. And I just think it's kind of funny that the mums got involved.
The mums, God bless them. Well, not the mums of Nazis now. I think they should have got involved in a different way, to be honest with you. Yeah, they very much cover the fact that anti-Semitism helps the Americans win this particular race.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's which is mad, isn't it? And awful.
It is quite
in
mad.
Lots of ways.
Yeah.
But
I mean, we can't really forget that two bombs were dropped on two cities in Japan. I don't know what the alternative would have been, but it's all just horrible, really. I would have preferred if none of it happened, to be honest, obviously.
I wanted to ask you one more question, which isn't to do with power-ups specifically, but to do with your experiences as a woman in the E-bit of STEM.
Mm-hmm.
Has it improved since you started your career?
I think when I joined engineering in the UK, it was 11% of the workforce was female. So that was back in 2010-ish. And I think we're now at 16%.
Okay.
So there has been some improvement. I feel like I see more women. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of improvement. Not a lot there.
I think we sort of look for them. I know,
yeah,
I do.
Maybe.
Within my industry's always predominantly been male as well, and that has shifted. But I think then you kind of seek out the other women.
Where are the women?
Where are the women?
I don't understand. Every industry you look at seems to be male-dominated, apart from maybe medical, like being a doctor or a nurse. But I do wonder where all the women are.
And if there's a woman listening who thinks, I'd really love to get involved in this kind of career and work with energy, are there any sort of tips you could give her?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just engineering, so even you could come and work in energy if you wanted to do, like, I don't know, public relations or communications or something like that. But we're all kind of big businesses and we need lawyers and commercial people and all sorts of disciplines to make this happen. So yeah, I would say there are lots of opportunities. It's a growing sector. You might have to do a little bit of studying or something to transition careers, but it's doable.
Well, you know, I'd recommend reading Power Up, An Engineer's Adventures into Sustainable Energy, which is published by Hodder. And Yasmin, you're always up to something, giving talks to make all of this more understandable to us muggles. So where can people follow you on the socials? Or indeed, I think you've got a website to find out what you're up to, please.
At Engineer Yasmin on the socials, and the website is engineeryasmin.com.
Thank you so, so much for chatting with me.
Thank you.
Standard Issue, for all women.